This is the Be Memorable podcast. I'm Ty Erickson. I'll be your host. We'll be talking to the best of the best on how to sell yourself, how to market yourself, how to brand yourself or your company, and overall, how to be memorable.
On this episode, I have sales process expert Dave Hansen with Client Tether back on to discuss how to create an impeccable follow-up process. And then we also dive into how to be more productive and some ideas on how to be more successful during these times with your sales. So let's go ahead and jump into the episode. Dave Hansen, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great. You know, we're sequestered in our house. Life's going pretty well.
Got a quiet spot. We can sit down and have a good conversation. I appreciate it. I know a lot of people have some extra time right now, but that's not always the case with everybody. So I appreciate it. I appreciate us having the ability to have this technology to be able to do this right now and then push out some content that I know will help other people. I know one thing that I'm doing big time right now, and this definitely isn't a shameless plug, but Client Tether, your software, your app is helped me out so much just in my day-to-day structure and just giving me a format to push out a lot of good content and consistently connect with my clientele and just make me feel like I'm getting the most out of my day. So the time is opportune. Like I'm just super excited about this and to be able to talk to you more and kind of pull some more information out of you with what you're doing every day. So maybe before we jump into the meat and potatoes that I've got, give me an idea. What are you doing right now? Like with the social climate and everything else, what's going on in your world? How are you filling your day and how are you adjusting?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to bring it up myself while we talk today, because so many people are struggling right now to figure out how do I readjust my life?
Yep.
A lot of businesses are not in a position where it's easy to just say, oh, everybody work from home.
Yep.
You know, if you're running an HVAC company or a home service company, some of you need to enter a home typically to provide service. So,
oh, man, that's so true. And we forget about that, just that those little nuances. Yeah.
And or I mean, the poor restaurant industry, I wish I had a golden nugget for those guys on this call, but they're just, you know, they're already adjusting. And I think the key is adjustment. I mean, I can tell you what we're doing as a company, but I'd love to share some insights really quickly about what am I seeing some of our clients and even, you know, contacts and friends that I have that I think are very successful that are helping.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
I mean, the first thing is the question a lot of people are asking is, well, who's answering the phone? Right. Like I have somebody in the office. Some companies are based on having four or five people fielding calls in an office setting, and they don't have an easy solution to be able to route calls to somebody's personal cell phone so they can work from their home office seamlessly.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, here, this is a shameless plug moment, but there are a lot of tools you can use that will do this. It's just something that's built into our platform. So a lot of our clients have said, hey, we used to have seven people answering phones in the office. Now I have seven people answering phones in their house. And it was like a couple of clicks, and it was kind of nice. But I mean, there are a lot of tools out there that can do that for companies. A lot of VoIP systems can already do that. Call forwarding at the desk. If you've got a desk phone at all, most of them have a call forwarding feature. I'm sure people are figuring this out, but you know, it's an adjustment a lot of people have to make.
Yeah. Is
how do I interact with my clients? Although there are fewer leads right now for people too. So, it's another key challenge people are facing is, okay, I have fewer incoming new leads. What can I do right now as a business to make sure I get enough revenue coming in despite the new lead downturn that I can keep my doors open, right? I can keep, you know, being families. And that's where you could probably share some insights into what you're doing. But, you know, having effective re-engagement campaigns, reassurance campaigns, giving people tips and tricks. If you're for example, one of our clients is a major home cleaning service, a franchise network, and they're communicating with their clients about ways that they can clean their home. What are some chemicals that will actually kill, you know, the COVID-19 virus that are like ammonia and vinegar? A lot of people don't know these things. So, you know, they're just putting themselves into an expert role that are giving their clients, you know, through regular communications over text, over email, maybe some phone calls to stay in touch and re-engage to make sure that their clients that are paying them continue to pay them. In fact, what they've seen, even in some of our commercial cleaning clients, is an increase in business, because now people are realizing, oh, not only do I want you to come in, I want you to come in more often.
Yeah.
Make sure that I'm, you know, sanitizing the hard surfaces and the doors and the light switches with chemicals that I know will kill the virus if they're in my house.
Makes sense. Yeah. Any others that you can think of as far as, I know one big thing right now, and this is probably always just industries wide, is just, you've got to get creative. If you're not a creative person, not everybody is, maybe try to surround yourself with some creative people that can help you think outside of the box and, you know, how to utilize some different things at this time. You know, I know that's what we've had to do, with everything we're doing, is just getting creative and saying, okay, what value can we add under the current temperature, you know? And it doesn't have to be our everyday business or our, you know, golden goose business. How can you get out of the box and just really be more creative on how to help other people out? My big thing is said, you know what, I'm going to step out for a minute and, you know, not so much focus on my business. That kind of comes as a given. Like, I have to do that anyways, but how could I significantly make an impact in somebody else that needs some help, whether it be my creativity, my sales, my market, whatever it may be, or even being a human being and saying, hey, could I contact my clients if they're within the vicinity and help them, you know, locate an item they need, or, you know, have somebody pick something up or deliver something or whatever it may be on that human side, and spending time right now and building those relationships, knowing that in 30, 60, 90 days, that those relationships and, what I invest in those will come back to me tenfold. And then, you know, focusing on how I can do the day to day to hold on through these times. So,
yeah, that's smart. And you know, you said something very important there, which is, if you're not a creative person, surround yourself with creative people. I mean, that's what podcasts are for. I mean, there are a lot of people with a lot of good ideas.
So true.
I hope you and I are included in that category to some people, not all, but a few, right? But, and also doing good. I mean, right now, so many people, I've seen them kind of shift and look inward and get very self-centered and very focused on the me. But I think that as we all kind of row together and find people that have deficiencies, I'm in a group, a mastermind group, and somebody sent out a group message and said, hey, somebody in this group over here is a catering company, and they are, they went from booming and record year to zero in about 3 weeks. What can we do to help them out? And, you know, you have this collective mastermind of people that said, wow, here are seven, there are like seven to 10 good ideas came out of that group. So also ask for help. I mean, that's, this is, you know, if you're struggling, your business is suffering, ask people, ask the smart people all around us that have different perspectives. Even if they're not that smart, they've maybe failed before at something that we can prevent ourselves from failing at. So I'd say that's another thing. And one quick tip, I mean, there are a lot of businesses that are functioning and usually require on-site, on-premise inspections or things like that, you know, quotations. I've got a number of clients that are in the service industry, so like painting and plumbing, electric, HVAC, things like that. I was talking to one just yesterday, and she said, you know, we're training our technicians to be able to do a video conference with our clients and do remote assessments of what might be failing inside their home heating and air conditioning systems.
Wow.
And I thought, now that's genius. I mean, you could use a free Zoom tool, right? Or any sort of video conferencing tool that's free. And you know, send a link to your clients. You're not in their home, but you can have them just walk down to their furnace and open the panel and check a few things. And now, I mean, it's a really enriching experience, actually. Now you're empowering a client to understand how to look at things in their furnace. So they're actually taking advantage of it. And it might become a service that they could spawn into in the future, having a remote assessment service where you can instantly get a technician on the phone. And
that's where I think right now is the time to innovate. So as we make these adjustments, as we get out of our comfort zones, it's really going to give us a chance to break out of that box and really start innovating and start walking down this road of a remote work. And I'm not saying, you know, that we're going to transition completely into a digital world, but learning more so how to get out of that box and start to use those to add more value and then use that going forward. It doesn't have to be just for the next 30, 60, you know, 90 days, whatever it is. Those are tools that right now we're being forced to use that we should be able to utilize indefinitely.
Oh, I agree. Well, and don't even get me started on the impact on the carbon output of our society if we were to let people work remote more normally. I mean, there's so many things that this could help us do in the future, but let's not get distracted by that, Ty.
Yeah.
These are good things.
I'll mention one thing on a flip side that we can, I feel like everybody can do. And, you know, some people are tight right now, so they're saying, hey, look, I can't get out there and spend a lot of money. But even if it's something super small, I think, like you said, if we can get out of our own minds and out of our own world and actually get out and help others, not only physically or mentally or whatever it may be, but to get money moving, whether it's, you know, buying, I'm not saying there's lemonade stands, but buying a 5-cent thing of lemonade down the street or going to the dollar store and just buying something or whatever it may be, like you said, with contractors, do some work, but keeping that money flowing and getting ourselves in an abundance mentality, whether it be small or large, try to stay out of that scarcity mentality of me, 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 and get out and help others. And there's something magical about that where everything just starts moving and coming right back to you. If you're willing to put that out there, in the end, it always works out good, but, not to get off too much on a tangent. I just think that's important right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Share your toilet paper, people. That's important. Yeah.
For real. So let's jump right into what we were going to talk about regardless today. And this is going to be, you know, important in these times, regardless, but, I wanted to talk about creating a follow-up system, and this is something that's added a ton of value to me right now over the past 6 months or a year or more that we've worked together. I've been able to build this very good follow-up system. So every day now, as I mentioned it when we began to talk in this episode, of creating a system where every day there's something going on and there's always activity going on because I'm building content and I'm pushing out value and I'm following up. But I wanted to pick your brain because you live in this space. I use in this space, but not so much live in it. So I wanted to talk about how can we build or create this follow-up system that's just robust so that every day, every month, every 6 months, year, that we've got something to plan on and we're consistent and nothing's falling between the cracks. So my first question that I had for you is, what are some good ways or what are the best ways somebody should be following up, whether it be in these times or in the future? If you can maybe mention that and even break it down, if we can start off with, you know, existing clients and then maybe jump into prospects of maybe just some basic follow-up tools.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, as a quick preamble, follow-up is one of the things that we struggle with the most as humans. And any job, any workforce, any industry, I've seen it across lots because I've worked in quite a few now. And it's consistent. The one thing that's consistent across most of our clients when we start working with them is they don't have a plan in place. They don't have a strategy, which means they don't have a process, which means they can't automate any sort of follow-up sequence.
Yep.
So there are a couple of aspects to follow-up sequences, I think, and keeping engaged with existing clients that are crucial, one of which is the message, right? Like, what am I going to tell them that's valuable? Everything we do that's outward, it needs to give some sort of a value, if it's to a prospect or to a client. You know, if you're running a dental office and you want to stay in front of your clients, do not create a newsletter. Like, people create newsletters all the time and it's filled with a bunch of information about them. Always newsletters almost 100% about them. And then maybe you'll squeeze in one value add tip at the bottom. So that's one thing I would say don't do. When you talk about your message to your clients, the message has to focus on them and what they care about. And I see this done backwards too many times. Marketers, and I don't mean to be critical, but oftentimes they're thinking, how can I talk about us but sort of make it feel like I'm talking about them? Stop. You know, what you need to ask yourself if you're a dentist is, what do my clients need? And so, let me share with you three tips that might help you to get your children to start brushing their teeth when they're young. I mean, that would be a valuable.
That's good.
Or what are some signs that you need to come into the dentist before your 6-month checkup? Or what are the three candies that are the most likely to rip out your fillings? or, you know, like these are true value add content that people would read and say, I'm going to spend 3 minutes of my life and read this article. And I might even share it because I'd have friends that would say, oh, I didn't know that. Share that tip with your friends. That's what you need. Every message you write should have some nugget in it that's valuable.
And don't you feel like we could just ask ourselves those questions and have confidence in what would we need or what would our family members need? Because I'm thinking some people may be thinking right now, well, geez, those are great ideas, Dave, but I'm just not that creative. But I think what it is more than anything is just ask yourself, you know, what would you want or how could somebody add value to you or your family or your friends? Or maybe just take a poll and call around and say, hey, if your dentist could add value to you, or if I was your dentist, what are some things that you would want to see or do? And maybe just do some homework that way to come up with those ideas or, yeah, how to make it about them as opposed to yourself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are tons of ways you can find it. I mean, you can – there. I'll give you a couple of tips. And I'm not the most creative – I'm not the smartest guy out there. And I just like – I don't know. I made those things up on the fly. Maybe they're great. Maybe they're terrible. I don't know.
Those are pretty good ideas if there's a dentist listening right now.
And I work with a bunch of dentists, so it's not like I talk about this stuff a lot.
Right.
But if you were to just Google like what are you know five interesting facts about let's shift away from dentists, but let's talk about insurance brokers.
Five things
I need to know about insurance plans, and you'll find a whole bunch of articles that are written mostly by your competitors that outline very interesting insights. This is also tied into a part of the second tip. Is if you find one of your competitors that you feel is out marketing you, go and look at what they're doing and look at their blogs and get a couple of tips. You might say, oh, I like his style. Emulation is a form of flattery, but there's nothing shameful about seeing people that are doing something right and then copying it. I mean, look at our athletic world, look at engineering around the world. That's why patents are so important to everyone. But there's no patent on creative media and don't copy word for word, but you might find some good ideas from competitors or from industries, right? If you're part of an industry, like the HVAC industry, there are all sorts of industry players that have assembled all sorts of great tips and tricks and even media kits sometimes. So pillage what's out there and then repurpose it.
Are you, Dave, are you very versed on Reddit? Do you use Reddit?
I don't use it much. No, I know what it is, but that's another great resource. What would you recommend about that, Ty?
I bring that up because that's probably something that I need to dial in a little bit more. I'm fortunate enough to have some creative people around me that I can kind of ping. I find, especially like if it was follow-up or emails or value added, like you would be one of the guys that I reach out to, you know, to ask, how do you feel about this? But yeah, I would say Google. I spend a lot of time doing research that way. Like you already mentioned, podcasts. I listen to a lot of books. I really search for inspiration every single day, meaning that, I try to fill my mind with good things that really get me in a good vibe, where I'm in a very positive vibe and it opens up my mind and I can get stuff flowing. I read a ton. Like I put a lot into my mind. I'll watch videos that pertain to whatever I'm trying to accomplish or whatever I feel inspired by of something I could share. Mm-hmm. And so that's really how I spend. That's how I find my ideas. And I don't find myself having a lack of ideas. But yeah, if you are struggling getting ideas on how to add value, I think it might be a lack of just information in, information out. You know, in finding what turns you on. I really think that would be the only idea that I would give, is just making sure that you're giving yourself every opportunity to have a creative mind by putting as much information as you can into it. And then also staying in the right frame of mind where those ideas are able to flow, as opposed to, you know, if you're in a bad spot or you're not feeling well for the day or you're not inspired, it's hard. I mean, you'll definitely have brain cramp and it's hard to come up with that stuff, but
yeah. And one other tip to add to that is you need to create time for it, because you can't just, unless you're a native, creative genius, you can't just sit down without any prep and then come up with amazing content. Nobody does that. So you need to do like you're saying, the preliminary work. I love Googling and watching videos. TED Talks can be good sometimes, yep. not always. Don't overtrust the TED Talks. But you know, there's a lot of great content out there that'll give you some creative ideas. And sometimes just going on a jog or playing basketball or yep. like getting yourself physically moving, it creates some emotional energy that's positive. And then you have a clean palate mentally to go back and attack the problem. Sit down for half an hour, come up with some ideas, run it by your team, run it by experts, your friends, and you know, your best critics internally. And then you'll come up with a pretty refined and good you know, series of content that you could share that would be value add with your clients.
And I agree.
That's the beginning though. I mean, you've got to figure out what's the right message to them. And then if you don't mind shifting gears, then you need to figure out what's the right medium to engage your clients. And a lot of them, this is something that's been a moving target now for the last couple of years. 10 years ago, it's like, well, email, I guess. They'll call them. And now that you can engage in social platforms, you can engage over text messaging, you can engage in video conferences. There are a lot of different tools now. So the question is that you have to ask with medium is not what's the cheapest and easiest, because otherwise you'll just be an email monger like everybody else out there. but you need to engage your clients where they want to be engaged. And right now, millennials and anybody under the age of like 35 right now, they're going to prefer that you text them. It actually, a lot of people get ticked if you try to message them in their social accounts. Like they don't want that right now. That's like their private space. Where 5 years ago, our text messages were kind of our private space, but that's changing.
Yeah.
And now, so if you shift your gears now and look at an older demographic, they want you to call them. They want to talk to a human. They don't want a text message. So it just depends on who your client is. You got to know them well, but picking the medium for the message is as important. Almost as important as the message itself. But if you don't have the right medium, they'll never see the message. So maybe more important.
Yeah, I think it's that balance. It's that combination.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find one medium or the other being more successful, or does it differ that much between like an existing client and a prospect as well? I'm guessing that would kind of differ it as well, right?
Yeah, you know, it does. It really does. And it depends on your industry and what your services are. There are a lot of factors you want to take into account. But as an example, an existing client is you're going to have a much more relaxed follow-up process with them, right? Where you're just trying to feed them value-added content, stay in front of them, stay top of mind. If you have a repeat business and it's transactional, then you want to stay in front of them with some frequency and give them valuable tips so that they – And then sometimes ask them, like the third part of this whole process, have a call to action where you're giving them value. And you say, hey, by the way, we would love a review online. Or by the way, we would love a referral. Do you know anybody who needs their eyelashes, plucked? Professionally, I don't know, whatever your service is. Or do you know anybody who could use private label chocolates, right?
Yep.
So you need to have kind of that plan in place, but it's going to be different. What I've seen is, depending on what your service is and the way your clients choose to engage, that'll dictate kind of how you're going to do it. And so a lot of organizations with their existing clients, they just do emails. I think it's a mistake. I think that texting by far has a much better response rate. As long as the client's expectations, there's like this unwritten contract, right, with your clients. There's also TCPA compliance. We might talk about that later, but you need opt-ins. Just, you know, keep that in mind. But people expect you to communicate with them in a way that maybe you did before they bought from you. So in the prospecting process, you're texting them and calling them a lot, and then they buy from you, then all you do is send them cold emails. Like, you've kind of violated what their expectations were of the level of your engagement. It's like your buddy that you used to hang out with a lot before you got married. And then he was like, call you, text you all the time. Like, hey, let's hang out. Then you get married and he just stops. Messages you on Facebook every now and then, or on Instagram. You're like, what's going on? Like, you know that you kind of lose, like you feel betrayed a little bit. Our customers feel that way sometimes. We really engage them a lot in one way, and then we stop and just slow it down to a very low trickle on email.
Yeah. So now that we know, you know, the first two things would be, you've got to find how to add value. Then you got to figure out what the platform and how you're going to distribute that. And I'm guessing that even comes down to a, you know, client by client or prospect by prospect basis. And people can kind of figure that out of, hey, how am I going to communicate with this client or prospect? And then my next question would be, how do you decide how often people should be touching base? Is it based on the amount of business? Is it based on the personality? Is it based on the office setup? What are your recommendations there? What are you finding that's working for you or your clients?
Yeah, great question. So I usually call this cadence. Like, what's the right cadence for the follow-up, you know, with anybody? And let me answer this with two different scenarios. One is a new lead. Okay. I'm going to split this a couple of ways. So if I'm looking for, if I'm a real estate, I'm in the market to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a market like Utah where it's real estate. It's like plucked up so fast. You have to like put an offer in immediately and you have to give them at least the asking price, if not a little bit more, to make sure you get the prime seat of the table to actually buy the house.
Yep.
Sometimes you have to do that within seconds of walking out the door after you've watched it.
Yep.
Or you've walked through the house. So if I'm in a market like that or the service like that where there's a high demand and a high response rate expected, then if I'm a person looking to get into a house and I'm the realtor now who's got that lead coming in, then my expectation is from that client that I'm going to respond to them immediately, right? Because I can't fiddle around with this. If I do, they're going to go contact three other realtors to get into that house. So my follow-up sequence, I would recommend you want to text immediately, probably have your phone ring immediately, get on the phone with them within a minute. Because while they're still looking at the pictures of the home, if you call them as a realtor, how likely are you going to be to book them to walk through the house? Very high.
Yeah.
And then maybe you have a follow-up text if you miss them via voicemail. So that way, 15 minutes later, they're still getting messages from you. They can tell you really care and you're committed to get things done for them. That's sending a message subconsciously that they're picking up saying, this guy's going to get crap done for me. If my contract is sitting in with the underwriters, he's going to follow up and make sure it gets done because he's persistent. So that's one example. Versus, let's say I'm shopping around for, I don't know, a new car. It's not an urgent need. It's
right.
Important maybe to me, but it's a big capital expense. If I'm looking at cars and I fill out a lead form to ask about a car, I don't want to have that guy call me, text me, then call me again in 5 minutes, and then text me again 2 minutes later. I mean, I'm going to be annoyed by that. So I think the key is to put yourself in the customer's shoes and say, what is the expectation of the customer? What is the urgency of the purchase? What's the caliber of the client? Is this a sophisticated buyer or not? And then pick your medium and your cadence accordingly so that you don't overdo it and you also don't underdo it. There's a fine balance there.
Yep. And that's not, here's what's funny. In that first scenario you were talking about with real estate, that immediate response and that follow-up is not easy. And I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but most people are not giving an immediate response. Like they're not Johnny on the spot. That lead comes in and there's an immediate response. And that's not easy to do. And if you ask me, and I live in this marketing sales world, it's not always easy to figure out how to do that. I'm guessing most people would go in and, you know, think of a traditional, CRM or some other tool. I used Outlook for years and I did everything manually. I was very good at it, but I did it all manually because a lot of the organizations that I worked with didn't give me those tools. Like I didn't have the tools and I couldn't just go in and implement stuff myself in a major corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep,
that's not easy to do. And I know that's what you do, Dave. And I don't know a good way to shift to this, but what is the best way to do that? I mean, the only answer to that is to go out and get a tool like Client Tether, right? I mean, you've got to do it manually. And then when that lead comes in, how do you follow up with that immediately if you don't have a tool like that? I mean, that's a real significant question of like probably the majority of the world is dealing with right now.
Right. Well, let me answer that by telling you a funny story.
Yeah.
So I'm the same as you. That, you know, pre-cool automation tool days, I was like figuring out how to do mail merges and Excel and Word and Outlook and you know, and tokenizing all sorts of stuff in Excel. Like I could get really nerdy with you about what I used to do there, but
my
organization did not provide me with any tools that helped.
Yep.
It was Smile and Dial. We were at Salesforce.com. And, you know, I respect the platform. They've paved the way, right? But it's as far as getting stuff done and creating productivity, like C minus, D plus, right? It just doesn't do anything to help you.
Yeah.
But most CRMs don't. Because all the, I've made up a new acronym for CRM, which I won't share on this discussion. But, CRMs really are a waste of money. I mean, if you have an engagement module tied directly into your platform that you don't have to pay a fortune for, then you're wasting your money.
Yep.
But what I used to do when I was running a team before I had cool automation tools at my disposal, it was all human capital. So we had to have an admin whose job it was to monitor a general inbox. Anytime a new lead came in, she had to track what the round robin was for the lead. And then she'd go and knock on an office door, make sure the salesperson could take the lead. If not, she went down to the next door and knocked.
And I remember those days.
Yeah, because we were serious. Like our policy was we responded to every lead within 5 minutes because we all know the data, right? You wait more than 5 minutes and your chance of talking to that lead drops 10 times.
Yep.
If you wait more than 30 minutes or 10 or you wait more than 30 minutes, then your chance of talking to that lead drops 100 times. It's just crazy. So we were doing it with human capital. That admin, you know, she missed it sometimes too. She was in the middle of something and she didn't know
human error.
Email.
Yep.
And there's no way around that. Yep. So, I mean, a shameless plug time, I guess, but having a platform that can automatically have the leads flow into it, first of all, automatically identify the source of lead and then fire off some sort of contextually relevant communication sequence. We call those action plans. Some people call them campaigns. Workflows, they're all the same thing. That's really the way you need to do it today to be competitive. And the challenge is we have a lot of clients that are using technology that are doing this now. And so if you're in the industry competing with one of my clients, you're toast because
we're
gonna have them scheduled and we're going to have a technician on site at their home before you guys even read your email, you know, and see you have a lead. It's kind of crazy how that works. Or you're going to have to overinvest in human capital and you're going to be throwing away thousands of dollars a month in an admin. I mean, they're wonderful. I don't mean to downplay the admins, but to just for this purpose of monitoring a lead inbox, like that's foolishness.
Yeah. And that's why I am excited to have you on this phone call because not everybody knows that resource. And even if they do know that resource, it may not be financially, you know, able to do, or maybe there's some type of other hiccup, or maybe it's just a matter of learning it, being able to just learn a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this, I know the purpose of this is not, you know, shameless plug, but I remember the day we met, I was using Client Tether 2 hours later. And the only reason it even took me 2 hours is because I had other meetings. It was something that I could jump right on. And that's, I see that as being a real challenge now too, is trying to implement something. Is super hard. At least most of the stuff that I'm using, even now I'm trying to implement other stuff that it's not easy. And it's a long process. You've got to be able to find something that also is not going to take up your whole day trying to implement and then still not be able to get you to where you want to be able to develop that system.
Yeah. The reality is there are other systems out there that can do this. I mean, we should be fair about it. You know, there are several tools. I mean, even if you're stuck using Salesforce because it's a corporate mandate, you can buy third-party plugins to do this. The problem is you have to license one-to-one with your users. Mm-hmm. It's mandatory with all of them. And they're usually $150 per person per month as an add-on to your $150 per month account. And it requires an admin to go in and configure things so it all works properly.
Yep, to do that.
Individual users don't have control of the messaging that goes out typically.
Right.
So it's usually template driven. Or you can look at the other end of the spectrum, tools that are kind of all-in-one automation tools that were designed by people that had, you know, PhD level mindsets. Like I don't mean to be disrespectful, but there are tools like Confusionsoft and HubSpot and others out there that you can get to this point where you have automation, but you're required to go to a 3-day offsite training, which most small businesses can't afford because that's no.
Yeah.
And then when you get home, you only remember half of what you learned and you have to pay for a support contract and customization because it can't really do what you want it to do. And they've got deep logic switches and cool tech in them. But to a regular small business owner, medium business owner, they don't have 5 people in their marketing department where they can divert a full-time person for 3 months to get it set up.
Right.
So that's one of the challenges I see with people trying to do this now is these guys are marketing to small businesses and they're making a mistake because they're creating angry customers who are spending too much money and getting stuck with systems that can't do what they thought it could do because they can't program.
Yeah.
Making it simple is an art. And I mean, shameless plug, I guess we do it real well. I mean, we can have people deployed with some automation in under an hour, and that blows people's minds. And it's so easy to use. We designed it for that. So
yeah.
But
yeah, I can attest to that.
I feel like we're pitching now. I don't mean to do that, but that's one of the dangers of trying to find automation tools is you got to find one that's easy enough to use that you can deploy it quickly, or else you'll be stuck forever.
Well, and that's why I think like podcasts like this are important, though. And again, not that it's about the plug, but most people don't have the resources to figure this stuff out. So that's like the whole purpose why I wanted to do this, too. Is it's not a matter of like plug, 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 but it's a matter of here is a resource to accomplish all these things that you've been wanting to do, but don't know how to do or can't afford or whatever it may be. Here is a resource. And that to me, that's the whole reason for this.
Right.
So jumping back into what we were talking about, we've kind of covered quite a bit, but what, so once you figured out and you have a tool and you've got your content, you've got your kind of an idea and how you want to do frequency, what is the best way to start developing this system and putting together, you know, which would be in our world, mine and your world, an action plan or a campaign or whatever it may be. And then twofold, how do you create this system? How do you develop this system so that stuff doesn't fall in between the cracks? I think that's a big challenge for salesmen, marketing people, business owners, stuff like that, of they can develop a pretty good system, but there's still some stuff falling between the cracks. So what are your recommendations there? And I know that's kind of a difficult question, but I'm thinking that you've got some good insight there.
Yeah, no, I've got a lot of painful experience in the past and seen a lot of really dumb stuff in my current role that I could answer that pretty well.
Yeah.
And the short answer is, Ty, that process and planning always precedes automation. Always, always, always. And there, if you're familiar with the concept of playbooks, like sales playbooks, that's something that I teach in, you know, CEO seminars and things that I've done, even some SBDC courses and personal coaching that I've done with organizations. You have to create a playbook which defines what your sales cycles are. Like, what are your processes for everybody in any part of your life cycle? Whether it's a prospect moving through a sales process or somebody who's now a client that you're trying to retain and engage, there should be a process and a stage for all of them.
Yeah.
And you should have a clearly defined input. Like, what does it take to get them into this stage? What should be happening in this stage? What knowledge should they be gaining from me in this stage? And then how do I get them out of this stage? And I know they should be moving into the next stage. You should think all of those parameters, and it takes a minute. Like, you can't just guess. You have to sit down, even defining your sales cycle. I mean, good heavens. I've seen people have like three steps in a sales cycle. I'm like, you have a 6-month sales process. How do you have three steps? Like, there's got to be some point in this process where there's an inflection and you know, what needs to happen to move people from here to here. And eventually we help them get, you know, 5 or 6 steps so they can actually break it down and then realize with their analytics, that, oh, we're having a problem at this stage in our process. When you have too few steps, you can actually never tell and truly diagnose what's going on and why your process is breaking down and you're losing business. So that's step one, is planning and process definition. And then once you know what those inputs, outputs, and what should be happening each stage, then you can build contextually relevant automation sequences to help engage those people with value-added touches, sending them information, data sheets that they might need. If they're in like a, let's say, a procurement stage, let's shift to a B2B model for a minute instead of B2C. If they're getting later into the sales stage and you know that they're moving into procurement, then you can have an action plan or a sequence that might send them a draft of a contract to review, to read. It might send them, you know, some your W-9. You can automate these things so your salesperson isn't saying, oh crap, I've got to remember to do this. And second, I've got to take my time to manually pull these things together, find the attachments, and send them out. Being able to automate those in a simple sequence and then maybe have a follow-up text go out the next day. Hey, did you get the stuff I sent yesterday? If you have any questions, please let me know. And then maybe have his phone ring the next day at a certain time or have a reminder in his email to call them 2 days later. Like, these things, if you automate them and they're multimedia, right? Email, text, call reminders, automated phone calls, cross-team emails to automate a reminder to the legal team to follow up with this client about the contract draft that we just sent. you can do these things. It's not that hard, but you have to know what needs to happen in that stage first. So then you can build the rich automation sequence that feels natural to the client and also keeps the salesperson advancing the sale.
Well, and that's, I think that's one thing, you know, I have a, and I'm dating myself here because I'm older than what I lead to believe every single day, but I, over, you know, time of kind of knowing how to, in the back of my head, facilitate a sale, kind of similar to like knowing a recipe, you kind of just throw it in there and you taste it and you're like, yeah, I can kind of get a feeling for that. But one thing that Client Tethers helped me do, like you said, is helped. And that goes to the point of how do you build that and not have it fall in between the cracks or even get it to stall at a certain point is I've been able to take, you know, the action plans and set them up as my connection plans, my conversion plans, my retention plans. And then that's helped me kind of look at it and say, okay, you know, is it stagnating? Is it progressing forward? And then on top of that, are my action plans, this value added content that I'm putting out, is it helping my clients and my prospects progress or helping our relationship progress? That's been a huge, huge, huge tool for me. And I, as you were just sitting there talking, it gave me some other ideas of with the contracts and different stuff like that. I'm going, yeah, I gotta get back in there. And there's a few things I'd like to add to help it progress a little bit further.
Yeah, well, glad I could help. Your follow-up question originally was, what do we do to make sure no one falls through the cracks?
Mm-hmm.
Because automation alone doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people struggle in that area.
Yeah.
Saying, okay, if they've got good, if they have their playbooks defined,
mm-hmm.
and they have their automation kind of built to engage at each stage, sometimes that automation ends and that person's like done. Like there's nothing else for them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you should be looking at is how do I either automatically move someone from one place to another when they get to the end of a sequence, or how do I put a persistent reminder at the end of that sequence so that I will on a regular basis or until I clear it, have something sitting there reminding me I need to do something. And some sort of screen notification that I know, you know, something color coded, something simple. So if I get into my CRM and I pull up a list of people, I can immediately see who do I have past due items or contacts with, or who am I due to talk to today? Like you got to have some sort of a system that puts it in front of you so that you don't forget people, and also make it so it doesn't just automatically disappear. If you have a reminder notice today to call someone, some systems do this and you don't actually call them, then it just disappears. And then that person's like immediately in the cracks.
No, so that's the worst
one, in the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I think we've covered, you know, the falling between the cracks that helps out. But, and yeah, ultimately you've got to have a tool, or if you're doing it manually, I've always told salespeople this, you've always got to have a follow-up to your follow-up. It can never just fall off the face of the earth. It can't just stop. There always has to be a follow-up on the follow-up, and it always has to be progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with human mistakes, like that's going to happen if you're doing it manually. It doesn't matter. I've always thought I was very good at it, and stuff's still going to fall between the cracks. So yeah, regardless what it is, you've got to get a tool, like you said, that helps you manage that pipeline. What about, and I know this is kind of going back to what we maybe talked about, is there any specific examples that you would maybe give of, like, maybe if there's a quick one of a email, a phone, a text, and I don't know, what are your thots? Well, maybe we'll digress too far, but let me just ask you a simple, almost yes and no. Is mail part of any strategy right now with what you're doing or what your clients are doing? Is
mm-hmm. like physical media mail?
Like physical.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll share this with you because, well, and that's actually something that, spoiler alert, we're looking at tying right into the platform also.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a better way to cut through the clutter than to send a package to somebody's office.
Yep.
You know, because there's no interruption, right? It's not like they have to decide. I mean, they have to prioritize when they're going to open it, but you create an automatic curiosity. I have a buddy who used to specialize in this, mm-hmm. Chris Salway. He's a whiz. In fact, if I ever have a question about something like this, I'll sometimes call him, be like, all right, Chris, You know, what have you done before? And this, I mean, this guy was working. Yeah. They would ship boat or canoe paddles to.
Oh my word!
With custom vinyl lettering on them.
That's awesome.
And you know, they were expensive, right? It cost, you know, $15 for the paddle, some money to put the lettering on the paddle. The packaging was pretty inexpensive, but the shipping was a little expensive because of the weird size. But I can't remember how much it was per piece, but ultimately it was like $40 per piece to get this and ship to a
CIO. That's not bad. That's not bad, especially depending on what industry you're in, you know?
Yeah, and you have to pay attention to what is your sale amount, right? If you're selling a $150,000 piece of software to a CIO, that is a pittance. And who cares?
No, nothing. Right? Yeah.
I mean, these guys, they'll fly people out to that city and tell the CIO they're in town for a visit. And if he can't schedule an appointment, they'll go home and then fly back out another time and try to set up an appointment.
Yeah.
It's a big ticket sale. So he was doing this campaign. I think he told me, and I can't remember exactly. It was like a 20,000% ROI on the campaign.
Wow. I believe it.
And they had stories like people would walk along with this big black package from the mailroom into the guy's office, and he'd have an audience of four or five people from his team excited to see him open whatever the heck's in the package.
That's awesome.
So direct mail can have that impact on people, which is why I love what you do, Ty. I mean, ship, and now it's getting warmer, but ship somebody some you know, private label chocolates in the mail with a handwritten note. That's going to go miles and miles and miles beyond, you know, sending them an email or even texting because it's thought.
Yep.
And
especially if it's different. Yeah. If it's completely different. And that is what I love about what we do is it's completely different, and you're able to brand the chocolate, and it gives someone you know, how many companies have their own chocolate. So and I love that when someone's able to send a box of chocolates and, you know, year round, especially when you're sending it, we have the ability to send during the summer with our cold pack. So when somebody's receiving a box of chocolates in the summer, I can guarantee you no one else is doing that. And if they are, they're getting chocolate soup, not chocolate truffles.
No, exactly. You got to stand out. That's the key thing. Differentiate or die, right?
Yep.
So, so mail, I think mail can have an important part of a sequence. We'll be testing that sometime really soon, actually, to see what kind of an impact mail can have with one of our partners on the follow-up sequence to see. I mean, it's a great question. The CEO of one of our partners is saying, we want to know if I send them a postcard first, what does that do to the open rate on my emails?
Yeah.
Due to the response rate of my text messages. I think it's a very, very wise hypothesis to test out, because I think he's onto something, that if you send them a couple of chocolates in the mail first, how much more likely are they going to be to open my email? I think it's going to be a lot higher. So anyway, I think you're right.
Sure.
I don't have any data to share with you yet on that point. But I can tell you this, effective follow-up campaigns or engagement campaigns for good examples. And let's shift to a home service business for a second, or even insurance. You know, anybody who's doing a service, let me give you a real example. This one's cool. So a specialty dentist office. So I think it's a periodontist. Mm-hmm. Partners generates leads for dentists, and then they pass them to the dentist. And they were telling me that their clients, the receptionists, were not engaging the leads. Send them leads, and then these ladies that were busy in the front desk doing other stuff, or guys, it doesn't have to be a lady, they were not following up and emailing and contacting these leads right away, and they just weren't booking as much revenue as they should have. And so they turned on an automation sequence where as soon as that lead was passed to them, it texted the lead to say hi and introduce themselves, and then to follow up with made the front desk phone ring so that the receptionist could answer it and then call the person within a few minutes and then have a discussion. So within minutes of them having said, hey, I'm interested in, you know, getting this, I need to get some orthodontic work done.
Yeah.
Had a text message from the orthodontist office, and that person was calling them and getting them on the phone. Within 3 days, they booked $90,000 worth of business.
Wow.
I love that example. And that was one of our partners that helped them set that process up. And I was like, that's genius. And
that's awesome.
You know, and how different are they from every other orthodontist office? At the end of the day, somebody sighs and says, oh, I guess I better look at my emails and find out who I should contact tomorrow. And then, you know, and I don't mean to be disparaging to orthodontists, right? They're all great.
No,
they're busy, you know, and sometimes, especially getting started, they're small. They can't afford to hire another person for $2,000, $3,000 a month, but, you know, spend $200 on some software, maybe, or less. Right? And all of a sudden, they're booking $90,000 in business, I would say that's a pretty good ROI study.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
what about,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and continue. Was there anything else that you wanted to expand on there? Like, sorry to cut you off on.
Oh, no, it's immediacy is most of the time with incoming leads, inbound leads, immediacy is one of the most important things, but also medium. So I would say, you know, you want to be texting people, you want to be calling people for most, and then maybe send an email follow-up if you want. But honestly, email is such a terrible form of follow-up with people. Who fills out a lead form and then goes to their inbox and waits? Says, well, I hope they email me. No, they're already checking out your competitor's website and filling out the lead form. So get in touch with them fast and get in touch with them in a way that you can engage them, even if they're not watching their inbox.
So and those are great points. We've talked about what to do, what's working. What about some things? And I know you mentioned like the newsletter, but what are maybe some other things that you see people are doing right now that they should not be doing, or that maybe just aren't helping them accomplish what they're looking to do?
Oh man. How much time have we got? Because
give me some common ones. Is there anything else similar to like a newsletter that you're like, look guys, this just, that's just not the way to go about it.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a couple of examples, and where I can share real examples without embarrassing someone, I will.
Sure.
Let's talk about, sending out group emails or larger emails.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've seen people do that's just a mistake is overdoing it, right? So you try to do a retention campaign, you want to stay in front of your customers, and all of a sudden, this customer is getting three emails in 72 hours plus a text. And it's the same concept of violating communication trust, but in the opposite direction, right? It's like eager puppy syndrome. And this is a very professional company that did this, and kind of a high-end service, and they just did it all wrong. And and so these customers were getting ticked, and they're like, hey, why are you like, we like you, but giving them kind of a stiff arm and saying, back up, buddy. I don't owe you anything. Like, stop sending me all these messages.
Yeah. So
that's one. It's just overdoing it. Having too much follow up, and it's all about what are the customer's expectations and violating their trust. You don't want to do that. Also, a big one that I'll bring up, and this is a huge issue, guys, is you don't want to be texting people who have not opted in to be texted with. It's against the law, and there are people out there trolling businesses right now. They're testing to see. There are literally people that go out and find businesses with poor opt-in messaging on their website, and they will fill out their lead form and then just cross their fingers and hope you text them. Now, I don't mean to be a fear monger. There's plenty of that going around. This is not a big group of people, but I talked to somebody yesterday who knew someone who'd been through this experience. And my advice to him was do not text people that who have not explicitly opted in for you to text them. So any lead form on your website, if you're okay with some advice time, and I'm not an attorney, but I can tell you that if you don't have a solid opt-in by your submit button that says, I'm acknowledging that I'm as I submit my lead to you, you have the right to contact me over phone and email and text. If you're not doing that.
Well, and it's also violating. I feel like text, you have to be able to get to the point where they have opted in. Like, I don't just ask yourself, do you want to be, and I'm not asking this to you. I'm saying I would ask myself, do I want to be receiving texts from somebody that I haven't really opted in to communicate that way? I don't want a text from somebody that I don't have a relationship with, or that I haven't handed my cell phone number and said, yeah, get a hold of me this way. Text me or call me. Mm-hmm. I don't want that message, you know, at 5 o'clock at night that says, come in for a teeth cleaning from a dentist or somebody that I don't know that well.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like it's a violation.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I don't know. It does feel like a violation. And even though it's not them being evil or rotten, terrible people, they're trying to engage customers in a meaningful way, just doing it in the wrong way and doing it through the wrong medium without the right permissions. There are certain unwritten rules of human behavior, and there are a lot of them are surrounding permissions. Like we have permission to do certain things. You don't walk up to some stranger in the street and then rub their back, right? I mean, that's right. Kind of the emotional equivalent of somebody feeling, you know, asking you a question about some product on your website and then you send them three text messages.
Yep. And that is the worst. I think people are so protective about that nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And businesses need to be careful because it's pretty easy to get sued. And there's too much precedent now where, even if they're trolling, you're still clearly violating their rights. And so just be careful. You know, if you have questions about it, maybe you and I can do a follow-up about that. But that's one big thing to avoid. The other thing, if you don't mind, one more example of what to avoid.
Go for it.
I'll share a funny example about it. Well, maybe it's sad and funny. Is some people are like, well, I need to do texting. You know, Dave and Ty are talking about texting. I'm going to go find a texting tool and use it. So go find something like a Scipio or a Zipwhip or some other tool that can do
texting.
But they use that tool with a disparate database that doesn't connect to their other tools, or maybe it loosely connects to their tools. A lot of these tools say they have lots of integrations, but they're just like zapping into another platform and there's like almost no talking between the two. And if a customer responds back and says, hey, stop texting me, that goes into this third party plugin, but not into the CRM where the client lives all day long. So guess what?
Ugh.
2 days later, they send another text.
Oh my word. Yeah.
Send another text. Right. So if you're going to do it, you need an integrated approach and not just quote unquote integrations through Zapier. Like you need to have a tool that notifies you when somebody unsubscribes. You need to have an automation sequence to be TCPA compliant. If they say stop, it should automatically stop. If they say not interested, wrong number, it should automatically stop. And I had a company, and this is the funny story. I had we got our oldest son a cell phone a couple of years ago, and he immediately started getting all these text messages from this job service, and they shall remain unnamed because many people probably know them. And he kept getting them, and he would reply, stop. I was like, buddy, just reply stop and it should shut off. He replied stop 57 text messages later, right? After three or four other attempts to say stop, not interested, please.
Oh, my word.
He seriously had 57 or maybe 67. I forget what number it was now. Extra text messages after we said stop. In the court of law, I could have paid for most of his undergraduate degree. $1,500 per additional violation after you've requested that you stop. I mean, seriously, think about how much money I could have taken these guys for. And so I called the CEO. Well, I called the company and I said, guys, hey, I know you're a reputable company. We got a little bit of a problem here. Who's in charge of this? Like, well, I think it's our CEO. So they put me on the line with him. I said, hey, I'm not that guy. But I just want you to be aware of the situation that you're in right now, because if it's happening with my son and his cell phone, I guarantee there are probably 30 to 50 other people with the same problem right now. You've got to shut this off and get control of your texting platform, because you are a walk-in time bomb, buddy. And he was like, holy crap, thanks so much. What's his phone number? Let me look it up. I'll have somebody manually remove it from the system, because we can't turn it off without manually removing it from the database. And I was like, dude, you got a bigger problem on you. I didn't tell him this, but I felt really bad for him. They might have been sued by now. I don't know. But you've got to have an integrated tool, so when somebody's telling you to stop, you can actually have it automatically shut off or have it put it right in your face so you know you need to take action on that account.
No, that's a very good example. Well, hey, I appreciate your time. I appreciate being able to pick your brain a little bit on behalf of my clients and the people that I share this with. We've got a few more topics I know that we've talked about that we'll jump back on, talk more. But again, I really do appreciate it, because I know this is something that I can put out right now and people can start applying all this. And I will for sure, put your information in there, because I'm sure as people are listening to this, they're going to be, more than interested to see how they can get involved with Client Tether. So I'll make sure that's very clear in there, not even, again, like we talked about, not for a sales pitch, but more so that people have a resource, to look into what we've talked about, and also something that can really, really, really help them during this time. And as always, like, I would love to talk to, I'm not the expert, but I would love to share with people what I'm doing on Client Tether and how it's worked for me. We went from zero to 78 reviews now, in less, less than a year. I'm engaging people on a daily basis. I get feedback constantly. And if I just showed people my dashboard, they'd fall in love, because they would just see the engagement. going on that I have. So I'm super passionate about it. But again, appreciate your time, Dave. And until next time.
Yeah, no, thanks for inviting me, Ty, and I appreciate it.
No problem. We'll talk soon.